Greetings everyone, Andy Dukes here again. Welcome to Ride and Talk. Ever thought about doing your own custom build? Or getting your own customised BMW one day? Well, prepare to be inspired by the legendary Danny Weidman from VTR Customs. This guy's been building bikes all his life, and you'll be familiar with some fantastic R90s that have come out of the VTR stable, as well as the infamous fire-breathing Spitfire that's blasted onto the sprint scene several years ago. There are many more super interesting builds, and we discuss a few of the highlights here, including Miss Fisher, a unique R18 inspired by a TV detective series in a Swiss vintage car from the 1920s. I guess it doesn't matter where you get your inspiration from when the results are this good. So listen up, learn and be inspired by Danny Weidman, who I caught up with at his workshop in Switzerland. Well, welcome to Ride and Talk, Danny. It's an honour to have you on the podcast, my friend.
Yeah, I feel honoured. We're in a small Swiss village here, so I feel honoured to be a guest here. Really, that's something new and strange to me.
Well, we'll see how you feel after I've bombarded you with 150 questions. But, I mean, where do we start, Danny? I guess we better start with you, because I've seen some amazing BMW bikes coming out of the VTR Customs garage, well, ever since the R9T broke cover in 2013. But you've been designing and building unique machines for much longer than that. Where did it all begin for you? I read somewhere that you've been working on bikes since you were about 6 years old.
Yeah, that's true. Somehow it's about genes, I think, in my blood. So the whole customization actually started when I was 5 years old. So my dad, he owned a car painter shop. And so I got all these small toy cars, matchbox. And of course, I was eager for the race cars like a BMW 3.0 CS, Group C, blah, blah, all these kind of stuff. But I think they don't look like they should look. So the painters in my dad's shop, they had to repaint my matchbox cars in the design I'd like to have. That was step one with 5 years. And then I started with bicycles doing motocross. First challenge was all the frames, they were broken after some of the higher jumps, so I added a fork from a motorcycle on the front fork, so I covered that problem, and so on and so on. So this is kind of as a kid, that somehow that started that way.
And there was always plenty of stuff lying around for you to fix things or modify things or to basically try things out, experiment, I guess.
Yes, and as some of my clients making it as fast as possible, which somehow and so at certain point of time you have some challenges with police, especially in Switzerland. So I remember the first very fast motorbicycle I had was kind of modified and tuned up like hell. So police caught me. And then at that time, to kind of making it a learning session for the kids, you had to go to the police station. You had to remove all the parts who were not allowed, and you had to crash them with a big hammer in front of the policeman. So,
so they make an example of you.
Yeah, an educational program didn't help too much. They caught me 3 times in a row. So.
Brilliant. And that's where it all started. And of course, that means you've been doing it around 50 years so far and still going strong. Yep. Now, VTR, it's the custom arm of the BMW Motorrad dealer, VTR Motorrad. How did this side of the business actually develop then, Danny?
I did several things in my professional life, started as a motorbike technician, but then was with banks and airline industry and so on. However, I was facing some challenges with my latest position. I was working in St. Moritz, a winter tourism destination, as a BMW car seller. But I didn't see any kind of future up there. So I discussed with my wife what's next. Staying St. Moritz and selling Audis or Mercedes was not really an option for me. And then going back to my roots, back to motorcycle business. And then I called up a friend of mine. We know each other from the supermoto racing series we raced together. And I said, hey, look, why shouldn't we do that together? So we find Stucki Zweirad. At that point, they had no inheritance successor on the radar. And so that's how we started buying Stucki Zweirad. And at that time, that was about 2014, there was not much out there on the BMW customization. So from the first day on, I knew that we go that road to be ahead of the bulk. And since, as we mentioned, my lifetime, I changed bicycles, cars, bikes. I never owned a standard vehicle. So everything is customized. So we started right away with customization. And lucky we, that was the date when the 90 came out.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. And you mentioned a little bit earlier that you were racing. I think you've raced motocross and supermoto, as you said. So I think one of the builds or the build that you're most famous for internationally is the Spitfire. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it made sense for you to build a racing bike, albeit one for sprint racing. I've also read somewhere that this amazing bike was inspired by your past as an aircraft mechanic or pilot. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
You missed that out of your previous description of your career progression.
Yeah. So the basic design idea was came by a sketch, Barbara Design. That's a design studio in France. They just do sketches from bikes, really nice bikes. And I saw this sketch, and from that moment, I knew that what the bike should look like. I worked as an aircraft technician for a Swiss airline about 10 years long. And as a side job, I helped an owner of a World War II aircraft to maintain his bike. So every year you have to do an annual check, blah, blah, and kind of as a payment, I was able to fly that bike too. So that was a nice deal we had there. And due to that history or my personal impressions, I knew exactly what the fuselage should look like from an airplane. And I remember that plane, that was a North American Trojan 28B. When firing up that engine, there were 2 meter flames out of the exhaust. So that was the trigger point to say, okay, let's build Spitfire and let's make it Spitfire. And that's why the bike looks like this and is famous for his flamethrower.
Absolutely. Now, I'll come back because I wanted to ask you a question about that in a minute. But just going back to that design, you said that you saw a sketch. So did the concept develop entirely in your head after seeing that sketch? Because I've heard you don't use sort of any computer-aided techniques in your production. Did you just do the whole thing from the sketch and the ideas that gave you then?
Yeah, that's true. We don't have any Photoshop or 3D animation. We don't work with CAD programming. We do it by hand, and we're pretty proud that all the alloy work we do here in our shop, Cello is doing that. And so that's a very influential progress where designing such. We know how it should look like. And then in the critical phases, Cello is asking me, Danny, come and show me what you like to do. We discuss the lines. We say, no, flatter on the front, higher on the rear. So it's really freehand freestyle until it gets the shape we all wanted to. And the Spitfire was probably the bike Cello almost killed me. So it took about four or five months to build that bike. And at the end, I get the feeling if I say one more time, let's do the shape there a bit different, he's going to kill me right away. So.
I can believe it. I can believe it. I mean, I just love that aluminium. Mm. You mentioned the fuselage, that style, that riveted bodywork and how low the overall bike is. But of course, like a lot of racing bikes, that bodywork covers some really lovely engineering modifications. Mm. So I'm sure that there must be a massive amount of interest whenever the bikes close, whenever the bodywork comes off at shows and events, because people want to see, you know, how you lowered the forks, what you've done to the rigid rear end. I believe the bike just sits about 90 centimeters high in total. So when you take the clothes off, when you take that bodywork off, do you get a lot of interest as to what's underneath?
Yeah, that was an interesting experience when we first showed the bike in Monza. So we unloaded, and then a crowd of people came along to see the bike. And then for technical control and inspection, you have to remove the body parts because they have to seal the fuel injection and things like that, because there are rules and regulation in this factory class. And then we had even more people around that bike to look underneath of the bodywork. One of the biggest challenges was actually something we didn't had on our radar, was the front fork, because the rules and regulation, they say you must have a minimum of 3 centimeters front fork travel. Now, taking an R1200R fork and shorten it by 30 centimeters is already a challenge, but this this freaking 30 centimeters were not enough, so we had to go lower again. And that was one of the bigger challenge actually we had with Spitfire.
Wow, yeah. I mean, just taking 30 centimeters incredible in the first place, yeah. But actually having to do that on the fly. Now, apologies if you've answered this question 100 times, but I did say that I'd come back to the Spitfire and spitting fire, mm-hmm. which, of course, which is what the tailpipes literally do. Was that idea there from the beginning, or was it a moment of inspiration over a whiskey and a cigar with friends one night to actually make that happen?
No, that was actually from the first moment. I knew that it must spit fire, and it should be called spit fire. Funny enough, the most comments, or some of the bad comments I got from the bike, was that's no respect for World War II. So you have a German bike with a British name, and so that's so. These kind of comments we got. So and the best answer to that one was what the one from Bike Exif. He said it's even worse. There is a Dutch sponsor and Swiss engineering underneath. But thanks God, we are all friends now in Europe. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's an old expression, isn't it? You can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all of the people all of the time. But can you briefly explain how it works then, you know, with a control unit and how the fuel spray is actually activated? Because I believe it's from a switch on the cockpit or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, we take the regular fuel we use for the bike anyway. You have already a fuel pump in mind, so you just make a second fuel line there. And then in the exhaust itself, we have an igniter plug, which we control with a separate switch. The thing sounds very easy and very logical. We spent hours to make this fire coming out. And I remember the day when we started to testing it here in the workshop. We did several hours because the challenge is you have very high air speeds coming out of the exhaust, then you have fuel. But as we all know, you need a certain mixture of air and fuel. So that freaking flame didn't fire up. We just blew out tons of fuel. We all smelled like a fuel dealer or like having a shower under a fuel nozzle. And when we came home, every wife was the same comment. Are you not still? Have you had fuel as a drink, or did you party with fuel? So yeah, sounds very easy. Getting it work was not that easy.
Yeah, well, you've got to make a lot of mistakes to make something special, have you? I think Amelie is best known for actually racing this bike. How nervous was she the first time when you were showing her how to activate and use that system?
The first challenge was when she saw the bike in real the first time. Then we made her sit on the bike to see if she's even able to touch the handlebars, because the bike is very, very long on the front end. So she was able to sit. And then the first test rides I did by myself, and then off we go, and she sat on the bike. And then we just were practicing a little bit the starting procedure. In 8 mile business, that's all you need is a very fast start, and the bike is very tricky to go fast and to have a fast start. So there we're practicing a little bit on a closed airfield and on other tracks. But she is proud and gearhead as we are. She sat on the bike and just loved it. And then we started. The second challenge was to turn the bike at the end of the 8 mile. So it has really, really limited steering angle because of the fancy design we had in mind. And then we already started to sketch some special tools to turn the bike at the end of the racetrack and to position one guy to turn the bike. But after the first races, then we saw that's possible. Takes about a bit longer than on another bike, but she was able to turn the bike and race it back again.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, she does a great job, and the bike itself looks great when she's on it, and with the fire breathing, it's probably quite intimidating for the other sprint competitors, isn't it?
And she had to learn that you have to calculate wind, wind directions and wind speed if you fire it up. So one day she almost fired up her own suit. Then she was a bit more concerned about wind directions after that.
Absolutely, yeah, fantastic. Now I've heard that the Spitfire is being offered up for sale. Is that right?
That's right. We stopped the 8 mile business because I mean, customizing business is the part where we have our hearts and where we can live and work our creativity. Fact is, key bulk of our business comes out of the regular BMW dealership, and I was racing with Polizia Uno as well in another category. So it's just too much A time B money spending it on that business. So we decided to stop, and there were more than 1,000 hours in Spitfire. Somehow a bit of it should go back, so that's why we decided to Spitfire is going on sale as well as Polizia too.
Okay, yeah. So how many kilometers does Spitfire have on the clock then with all of those eighth of a mile sprints and not much in between?
Yeah, guess. Make a guess, Andy.
I would say maybe less than 200.
Very, very good. Yeah, I think you should be a team member of ours. It's actually pretty precise, 200 kilometers on the speedo. So actually, almost brand new.
Yeah, just one careful lady owner, so to speak.
Yeah. A very old, slow driving lady.
Yeah. How much are you looking for it, Danny? How much is it being sold
It's
for?
a 5-digit number, a bit below $90,000.
Yeah, well, it's a completely unique bike, that's for sure. I'm sure there'll be lots of interest in. And speaking of other unique bikes, I saw another bike of yours for sale too. It's a 1986 R65, interestingly, with a vintage fly fishing rod and an old boat paddle mounted on the side.
Yeah.
Now, I presume this is an ironic nod to all those custom bikes out there with the surf and the skateboard fixing. Now, you've called this one Willoughby 65, so I'm guessing there's a cool story behind this bike, Danny.
Actually, it is because it's my private bike. So, whenever we build a bike for ourselves or for customers, we like to have the bike to tell a story. And this story is because I really love 60s movies with Doris Day, Rock Hudson, etc. And there's one movie which I like very much. It's called Man's Favorite Sports, where Rock Hudson is playing a fisherman's expert, writing books and giving tips, but actually never catch the fish in his whole life. And in that movie, he's called Willoughby. So that's why the bike is called Willoughby 65. The movie was from 65. I am born in 65, and the bike is a R65. And it does have paddle and fishing rods because of Rock Hudson, but also, as you mentioned, because at that time when we built that bike, every customizer was putting surfboards or skateboards on his bike. And we say, we can do that different. We don't like to follow the crowd. So.
Understood. Yeah, no, it's a fantastic looking bike, and you say it's your personal bike, but I'm imagining if you put 1,000 hours into the Spitfire, imagining you put a lot of hours into this. So, is some of that sort of, you have to sell it because you want to keep your wife, or?
No, it's just I have too less time to ride it. When I ride bikes, it's usually with friends or with clients, so I can't take this one because of reliability and noise level. So we said it sits here and it has even a bit more than 200 kilometers on its speedo since we rebuilt it, the bike, and we've done it very fast. There, here we are again with the police story, and so with I like to have fast bikes, probably not looking fast but are fast. So it's it has a big bore kit, flat slider, carburetors, camshaft, digital ignition. It's really, it goes real first gear, so it's a fast one. I would like to keep it, but it doesn't make sense to just keep it here as a showroom attraction.
Yeah, I understand. It's if the listeners want to read a little bit more about that bike, I think they can find out about it on the VTR Customs website, can't they?
Correct, and also on BikeX if there's an article about the bike.
Okay, yeah, good to know. And this theme, these TV themes, film themes, it brings me nicely onto the latest R18 custom project you've working in, because there's definitely a film / TV connection too there, isn't there? Wasn't Miss Fisher a detective of some sorts?
Yeah, that's actually a TV show. Miss Fisher's Mysterious Murders, playing in the late 20s, early 30s in Australia. And I don't know, I like to have these kind of TV shows, old movies and criminal stories. I'm also a James Bond fan. And looking on the R18, and we didn't find the right R18 for VTR. There was a long process. The first thoughts were, let's do it in a kind of Harley style. So actually the first concept was Harley does have a very nice olive dark green matte color. For about 3 years ago, they came out with the color. That was the first topic or design. And then Miss Fisher does have a Hispano Suiza. That's an old Swiss car brand, which is shown on the show, obviously. And then when I saw her driving with that car the 100th time, I almost seen all of the series. I said, that's it. It's a Swiss, so it's Swiss, and it has this classy old school style, and that. Basically, that was the moment when I had the right concept and design in my mind, and of course, the color scheme. Colors are always a very, very important topic for us. We spend a lot of times with our painter and with samples and so on. So, yeah, that was the trigger point why Miss Fisher is Miss Fisher now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful car from that series, and I totally understand where you got the color scheme from now. How did it translate across to a bike, though? You know, you've got this beautiful four-wheel car, this beautiful detective, but how do you translate that across to two wheels?
That's an interesting process. We said, let's do it not only classic, because then it would have spoke wheels, of course. We said, let's do a kind of mixture of modern, bad-looking bike, but also very classy. And then it was very clear the color scheme, the Hispano Suiza from Miss Fisher is all black, except body is dark red with polished alloy. And then you just, that's quickly said, but a long job, you have to find the lines then on the bike. That's a topic we spend also a lot of time together with the customization team and the painter until we got the line. We've seen other R18 custom bikes, and when I look to them, all of them are very nice work and I really love them. But I figured out that they all use the standard line, for example, on the gas tank, this hand lining, which is the classy R5 design. And we said, let's do it different. We'd like to find another line. I'm owning an old Husqvarna motocross bike from the 80s, and that's the typical knee part of the gas tank. We make it more a bit looking like Art Deco or speedy shape. So this is how we are working on an idea to get it then on the bike. It's a long way and a lot of samples and trying out and painting lines on the bike until you get the final solution.
And is this build, is Miss Fisher for a customer, or do you prefer to build what you want and then see if it sells, or how does that process work?
Yeah, with brand new models, that's actually our preferred way. The first shot is VTR custom, so no compromises and questions from any clients, just the way we'd like to build it. And of course, other bikes we build for customers with their own story and their own preferences. But if a model is brand new, like we did on the R90, that's always a VTR Customs owned bike, and then we build it, and then we are going to sell it.
What were the main challenges of this build, do you think, and what are you most proud of when you see the results?
Most proud is that we have the design we were looking for, a classy and a bit different look than other R18s have. The biggest challenge is always if you get a new model, you have to understand the bike, what is possible with and what where are the limits constructional wise. Then you have a financial target. I mean, we can build for 200,000, but we'd like to sell it at the end. So these are the kind of the challenges to find out. But the first crucial thing for me is understand the R18. And that's a new customizer market, which, for example, a multi-brand dealer who has Harley and BMW has a clear advantage because he knows exactly how all the different designs and where to get the parts. And so, actually, I spend about at least half a day to just find the right rear fender pieces or a seat, where, which is for a 90. I all have that in my mind, so it takes me about 10 seconds. These were the challenges, but we're proud of the result, and we and also the people like it.
Yeah, it looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, have you got any interest in it already, or do you want to keep it in the showroom for a while?
It sounds stupid, but unfortunately, we have already an interestee. Actually, a customer from us, he already owns another custom bike. And I sent him some pictures, sneak previews. I told him, don't go out with them. I'm going to kill you. And then he came to the shop and he saw the bike. And yeah, can we twist the seat a bit higher? Because he has very long legs. So it looks like, as far as I know, this client probably is sold already.
And just going back to the original or the standard R18 when it was originally unveiled. Now, you've already done lots of R90s, but what were your thoughts when you first saw the big boxer prototypes? Were you excited about that because of the possibilities it offers you?
Yeah, very much, especially the engine itself. That's a piece of art. If you remove the engine, you could put it in your living room as a piece of art. That really, I love it. And it then when we start to work on the bike, we figured out, as our colleagues in Munich, they really took it serious with approaching or making something against Harley. There are pieces on that bike, they are as heavy as on a Harley. So we started to measure some of the pieces. The exhaust connection, for example, the connection between cylinder head and downpipe, we have to remove this because we'd like it, of course, to paint it and to have it a special design. So it's about almost 1 kilo heavy. So I can prove it's 800 grams, just that connector. So I like it to have it really authentic. And the design is fabulous, and you can do a lot of different shapes and design. So Miss Fisher was actually planned as our standard demo bike. Now seeing the result, I fear to hand that over to every client. So we said, oh shit, we can't do that. So we have to build a second one. And now we're working on our standard demo bike, which is going to be a classic. We'd like to build a classic bobber, remove all the front and the headlights, but we like to have the fat 16 tire inches with a smaller budget, and we convert it in this direction then.
Yeah, I mean, like lots of customizers, you'd have just taken the bike apart and stripped it right back to see what the possibilities were. But in doing that, do you feel that BMW has hit on a winning formula with a bike like its R18 and its endless scope for customization?
Definitely, because it allows various styles, and it's also constructed quite nicely for us to remove and install parts and to change parts. There's just the most heard comment, and probably you are familiar with that too, is if you sit a Harley rider on that bike, he doesn't like the boxer hinges because he can stretch his leg. So it's an unusual position. Basically, I always say it's a very nice and really from ground up designed new cruiser bike, which I really love it, and also for customization. But I think it's not that easy as we all think to get Harley riders on that bike, and that's why we've built Miss Fisher. And I promise you will see that bike on every single Harley event in Switzerland and in Europe. We'd like to go out to show the Harley crowd that we can build different styles with that bike.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time, isn't it? And
Yeah.
not just in Switzerland either, because I'm sure you've got fans and you've got customers all over the world. But actually, what is the Swiss market like, Danny? What do the locals enjoy riding?
The local, that's kind of something strange. Either it's cars or bikes. We have very strict rules, speed rules, and if you get speed trapped, it's even possible that you're losing your vehicle, so that the police is taking your bike and then it's not anymore your bike. Noise level is a challenge, but however, Swiss guys, they like to have full optional and fast bikes. And something I learned, especially in comparison to the German markets, a Swiss rider usually changes his GS every 3 years.
2 years,
Versus,
okay.
2 to 3 years, he'd like to get the new one. And when I look into the German markets, they usually ride their GS until she's dead, and
Yeah.
then they change the bike. So they have more frequently and usually full optional. So they make all crosses you can. That's not a single question to not have a dynamic ASA, for example.
Yeah, I think you've got a great climate and great roads, of course, in Switzerland. So do you think this also determines the kind of bikes that are sold?
Yes and no. Yeah, we have windy, tiny roads just in front of us. So after your working hours, you can do an easy, nice 1 hour ride across this mountain scenery. When I look to the GS Adventure, for example, I always compare that bike with the SUV. So most of my adventure clients, they buy it because of the look, not because they'd like to ride the Panamericana or something like that. It's just the look, and most of the GS Adventure have never seen a dirty road. That's something like I compared to the X5. The X5s I was selling, probably 1 out of 500 have seen a dirty road.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's hard to deny that GS Adventure looks fantastic, regardless of whether you want to take it off road. Although I think we both agree it looks much better caked in mud as well, doesn't
Yeah,
it?
definitely.
But speaking of great looking bikes, I mean, obviously we've seen plenty of really nice classic boxers and R9T builds coming out of the VTR garage over the years, and now this R18 Miss Fisher, of course. But you also took on the challenge of S Series custom builds in the past. They can't have been easy at all. I mean, I'm guessing that the 1000cc four cylinder platform doesn't offer customizers like yourself such an easy ride, does it?
Yeah, that's true. We are known for all these 90 and probably for the two valve boxes, but it's always kind of a challenge for us ourselves. We'd like to do things different, and then we said, well, we never customized a four cylinder unless a little bit of painting and a little bit of exhaust. And that was the reason why 2 years ago we had an S1000RR customized and an S1000XR customized, which I liked the aggressive, sporty look, and again, they always have kind of a story of ourselves. So the XR is kind of a supermoto race bike, but with four cylinders. And we will continue to customize bikes you usually don't see customized too much.
Yeah, those bikes certainly look fantastic. I bet they sold quickly, didn't they?
Yep, they sold quickly. Yeah.
And is it true that you guarantee to your customers to never build the same bike twice? You know, so what they have will always be a one of a kind machine.
That's true, actually. And I have a lot of mails asking me, I would like to have a Chiton 61 one-on-one, the same bike. What's the price? When delivered? And our standard answer is that's a client promise. There are all one-offs. I can build bikes in with a similar concept, but different details or different paint scheme. But one-on-one copies are not doable for us. Actually, I just had today a mail from a German client or customer interested in Miss Fisher. He'd like to have his R18 converted into Miss Fisher. I said we can do similar styles or color schemes, but it's one-off. Saying that, we also we introduced a flat rate customizing concept to our customers, because the key challenge is always you see an R90 owner, he sees our websites, and then he comes into the shop and says, I would like to have this like Chiton and the front like this, and so I make notes, and at the end I say, yeah, we're speaking about 30,000 Swiss francs conversion costs, and then it's silent, and then okay, what? So we changed the concept to be quicker and more efficient. We said there are three packages: small, medium, large. We offer that on R90 Pure, Classic, and Scrambler. And the client sees what he gets, and he has his own decision on the color scheme, on the seat cover, but all the rest is in this package. He can add on if he like. If he says, I'd like to have a special wheel set, that's doable as well. But going that road, people now really like to see, to buy what they see. That's an old selling rule. So every year we build three new flat rate bikes without on any customer behind to see, to show the people what they can do and what we can do for 4,800, for 7,000, or for 15,000 Swiss francs. And that changed the game. And that's the only piece where we say we do copies one-on-one, because I sold the 90 Pure Super S probably three or four times the same bike.
I mean, for those who really do want to or one of a kind machine, it's good that you make that promise. But yeah, certainly a price matrix makes a lot of sense as well. But speaking of one of a kinds, what was the thinking behind making a VTR Custom G310GS?
A, our apprenticeship, and B, in Switzerland, we discussed about engine power for Switzerland. The G310 is not our top selling bike, so to speak. And so we said that's a shame. So let's build a cool and nice bike out of this G310. And this is what we've done. To don't make it too costly, we have said that's our apprenticeship project. So here's your bike, here's your budget. And then we exchanged some ideas. And then that's how the G310 GS came on the road.
Fantastic. Yeah, what a great project for an apprentice to sink his or her teeth into as well. And that's one thing that perhaps I haven't sort of made clear enough. It's not just you, is it? I mean, you've got a whole team of specialists at VTR Customs. But what about people listening today who don't have all those years of engineering or building experience, that, you know, they're just BMW fans who want to experiment with a first ever build? Where's the starting point for them, Danny? Can you still find an old air-cooled boxer bike at a decent price, or should they be looking elsewhere? What advice can you give?
Actually, when we look for two valve boxers, we have a stock on old bikes, and I always say to the customers, we were looking for the ugliest two valve boxer, so the one you said, ah, that's a crap. So that's the bike we are looking for. We measure the engine compression, if the engine okay, and all the rest is kind of
All the
pieces and
rest
parts
gets
that.
taken off, yeah.
And so that's how we are looking for our bikes. Now, if you are a private guy who'd like to have his own garage built, that's of course a bit different. I would rather recommend to look for a two valve boxer who is already a bit customized in the direction I'd like, and then to make it out of that one my personal piece. And especially in Switzerland, you must really take care that all this customization is street legal. So you have to be very sure that you buy a bike which is customized but street legal. If not, you got bigger challenges and expenses there.
Say the customer is myself, Danny, and I've had a good year. I've worked hard. I've got a little bit of money saved up, and I've got an idea in my head for a build. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that it's the R18. If I've got my bike and I've got a budget of, for example, 10,000 Swiss francs, which I think is about 8,000 or 9,000 euros, what are you able to give me for that? And how long is it going to take before it's ready? Assuming that you've got a lot of the other work out of the way first, and I want it as soon as possible, by the way, because summer's coming in Europe.
You must be a new customer, because usually they wait 2 years. They say, no, let's give it time. No, I'm just kidding. So the process is basically pretty much the same if it's a 90 or something else. I always ask the client, he should bring me pictures from bikes or from details he loved very much. This tail, this color scheme, I like this front, I like the handlebar, I like these electrical switches, blah, blah, blah. So I can A, judge, is this possible street legal? That's question number one in Switzerland. And then we speak about budgets. Beside these pictures, I always ask the client to tell me a little bit of his background. Why is this bike so important to him? Is there a special story behind? And does he already have a name for the bike? So this is something, A, we do for ourselves, but B, my experience is only then, when you get all this background information, you are able to produce the bike the client wants to. And then after exchanging stories and background information and pictures, second stop point is budget. Then we're speaking figures. I make a concrete offer. Sometimes then we start adding some red markers to reduce the budget. And then from there, we're going on to produce the bike. And while producing it, we call the client at least two times to get the detailed decisions. When we start to paint or we do the upholstery, we'd like really to have the client on the bike to show him different lines, different colors, and different letters, and so on. So he's kind of part of that process. Sometimes it's really creative, and sometimes we are going to exceed what we've decided or budgeted at the first time. Whenever the bike is finished, he will see on his invoice, red is adding and green is removing from his budget, so he has a clear overview. But it's about pictures, street legal, budget, and personal stories. Why is this bike, should that bike look like that, and what is the story behind?
And do most people have a clear idea, a clear picture in their head of what they're looking for in terms of a finished product, or are they happy to be guided by you and your team through that journey?
That's very, very different. I do have clients, they say, look, that's the budget, color should be green, do it. You have a nice style, let's do it. I full trust, you do whatever you like. Call me up in 2 months, I will get it. Other clients, they discuss with you every single detail, every electrical switch, every wiring. So sometimes it's a challenge to handle all these different clients, but that's part of the process. Finally, we built their dream bike, and it should look like they wanted to have it. And the best moment for me is if I unveil the final custom bike. I just delivered last Saturday a 90 customized for about 20,000 Swissies, and you will never forget the faces of your clients when you unveil the bike.
Is it sometimes, I mean, is it a nervous time for you when you're going to deliver a bike? Because, you know, I'm assuming that 99% of the time people are really happy and overjoyed, but it can go the other way, I guess.
Up until now, we were happy. Of course, you have some details. Clients said, yeah, but I'd like to have these foot pegs a little bit different, and the lettering is not the way I wanted, some details. But overall, if you're doing a good job, you pretty much will match the experience and the customer's need.
Yeah, I could see how it can become quite addictive, actually, getting an idea in your head of the bike you want. And I'm sure that once people have one bike done, they end up being repeat customers and come to you time and time again.
Yeah, or sending me customers as well. That's also something we experience, that we build a bike for them. and then a friend of them is having a Triumph and like to change to also a 90, and then they show up in the store again, and then we do his friend's custom bike as well. So it's people to people marketing.
Yeah, that's the best way. That's the way it
yeah,
should always be, if
definitely,
possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, good advice there. Thanks, Danny. So what future projects have you got in the pipeline then?
First, finish all customer projects, which is a challenge. It's springtime already, so we have to deliver new bikes. Our workshop is full, and I have another, I think, left always 10 or 15 projects. In total, we had 30 projects to finish. And then it's in the high season, we usually build more from this flat rate customization. I have one bigger R18 project from a customer. He already have a 90 from us, and he's a crazy gearhead like we are, and cost limits is the sky. So this is going to be really crazy and bad R18, but it will take us till end of the year until we see some pictures from that bike.
Yeah, well, clearly you can let your imagination run wild on that one. And yeah, sounds like you've been very creative during the lockdown and very busy as well. So, Danny, that's all we've got time for today. It's been a real pleasure having you as a guest on Ride and Talk. And I've really enjoyed learning more about the wonderful world of VTR Custom. And so thanks ever so much for your time. And I really hope to catch up with you in person before too long at a real motorcycle show, not a virtual one.
And a real beer or whiskey and a real cigar. That's something I owe you, promised here by a Swiss gentleman.
I'll hold you to that, Danny. Thank you very much for today. Take care, my friend.
Okay. You too. Thanks, Andy.
Cheers, Danny. That was a great chat. Now I'm definitely going to hunt for an old air-cooled boxer, one of the ugly ones, as you put it, that I can remove all the plastic, take a good look at what's underneath, and then let my imagination run wild in the hope of creating something special and unique, for me of course. Or maybe find one of the nicer ones and restore it to its original glory. Either way, I'm looking forward to getting my hands dirty, and I might just be calling you once or twice for some well-needed advice. That'll be a project for next winter though, because with summer on its way in Europe, there's a lot of riding to be done. Anyway, take care and stay safe out there, everybody. Bye for now.